Here we go, staging them up on the left-hand lane. The Throwdown Motorsports 65 Chevy 2. 626 on the dial, it's Zach Slump. On the right-hand side, the Icon Pistons Diamond Engine and Machine 74 Vega Wagon. 592 on the dial, it's Jake Hodge.
Welcome back to Dialed In, episode number 15, or better known as Kumi-Natano, the language of 140 million people that speak Swahili in East Africa. Zach, what's up, man?
Oh, man. Well, not a whole lot, I guess. You know, racing-wise, as far as messing with the car this week, I got the engine out. I got it tore apart, and now I'm the proud owner of a two-piece scat crankshaft for a 383. So if anybody needs that, it's really trick. But fortunately, though, I mean, trying to stay positive, look at the bright side of everything, it didn't tear anything else up. So it could have been a whole lot worse. I broke crankshafts before, and it wasn't this pretty. There wasn't really a whole lot of metal in there. Anything that got into bearings, the block, it looks perfect. I'm probably going to go ahead and throw a set of rods in it just to be safe, but I also would put the other ones back in and run it again. So, you know, I guess as far as that goes, not too bad. You know, and I was trying to share my experiences on Facebook of what was going on, and somebody saying that they wouldn't buy a scat. And I was like, it's been in there 7 years. So, I mean, you could say what you want to about it. And you know, for the budget racer, I think it's a good product. I mean, 7 years of my flogging and double entering and running and maybe not keeping up on maintenance as much as I should. I'm trying to, but you know, it was a trooper, and it's just one of them things. So we will figure out what we're going to put in it next and move on.
Is that kind of like a three-quarter race cam?
Yeah, I think so.
Crankshaft.
That's right. Yeah, that's what everybody's uncle
double,
had. And
double the horsepower.
Yeah. Everybody had an uncle that had the 76 Nova with that in it, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Jump over a Coke can, all that good stuff. But yeah, other than that, man, get ready for Christmas. We went Christmas shopping and did a little bit of that stuff and just trying to get everything together for the boys and get everything planned out. But what about you, buddy? You know, how was PRI?
Well, it was up and down for sure. The week started out pretty down, and it didn't take long. Still catching up on sleep. I spent a lot of time at the slot car track. I was PRI most of the day Thursday, better half of the day Friday, and then spent the rest of the weekend slot car racing innovative slots. But yeah, it was an eventful week and whatnot.
Mm-hmm. I saw Easton's new slot car. That was pretty sweet.
Yeah, Josh Rogers knocked that replica of his junior out of the park. Mm-hmm. Shout out to Josh Rogers. That thing is awesome.
Cool. And then, you know, there was a little something else that happened, right?
Yeah, I guess so. Not really worth mentioning because, I don't know, it's done and over with, and it was a good ride. I'm no longer with the SFG team, and yeah, and I was pretty down about it for a little bit because, you know, I put my heart and soul into making sure everybody was happy around that place, and ended up working out really, really well, I think, and that's some news to come here in the future. I had Big Jed reach out and say, hey, you know, keep your head up. More or less, it was just take what you've learned from this and apply it. Don't dwell on it and suffer from it. So I had a lot of great friends reach out to me, and you know what? It really made for a great weekend, and be some exciting news to come in, I think, a week or so. So we'll hear more on that. And I still plan on. I'm sure I'll go race a race around here or two, maybe in Michigan with those guys, but. Mm-hmm. I wish all of you, my friends that I met there and the people that I got to interact with, I wish them nothing but the best, and I hope to see them around and just like we've always been friends.
Right. Man, that's great. What a good person to take advice from, you know, for Jed. I mean, as far as the announcing, he's been through it. Man, you know, I didn't know him. I hadn't talked to him, you know, more than a couple words before I went on that podcast. And man, he's just a heck of a good dude. So that's awesome. And that's definitely a good person to listen to on that for sure. So I'm sure, you know, like you said, more opportunities to come for sure for you. And you did a great job. You worked your butt off. Everybody could see that. You know, you did a great job on the mic every time. So you got nothing to hang your head about.
Just to revert back, you know, everybody was wondering what happened and whatnot. I'm not going to go out and publicly bash somebody. I'm not going to go out and run somebody's name through the mud because that's, you know, 4 years ago, that was me. Absolutely. But in the grand scheme of things, this is a very minor hiccup in what my process and my plan is. But, you know, with that being said, I don't hide the truth from anybody. So I've had plenty of people ask me, and I've given them the honest answer of what went down. And it's pretty interesting. So anybody that wants to know, I'm not going to go out there and just throw it on Facebook, because that's not me. So
right. So tell us about the slot car racing that was going up there at PRA, where they had the what did you say it was called? The Kris Kringle Crackdown?
Yep, the Kris Kringle Crackdown. We had a gambler's race Thursday night, which my cousin Brandon Hodge won. Friday, they mm-hmm. had a $600 win race. It was like a mm-hmm. four-car limit. Nick Finney won that. Saturday, the main event, $2,000 to win in a slot car race, have you. It right. was Jesse Edens picked up the win. And yesterday, little Phil Combs picked up the win for the Sunday portion of the Kris Kringle Crackdown. It was also $600 to win on Sunday. And, you know, that was a
nice.
That was a pretty good, pretty neat ordeal, because they had a deal. If you paid $100, you raced Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And that was four entries Friday for $600. And you had eight entries in Saturday for $2,000. And you had four entries Sunday for $600. Mm-hmm. So all in all, you had 16 total shots at winning the race for $100. And there's $3,200 in winner purses, and then just as much payback money going through all the way down to the quarterfinals. So big thanks to Mike Thomas, and Motor Mania TV was there putting it on, and Nick Finney was helping promote the race, and Billy Fields, and they had probably $3,500 worth of giveaway cars for that thing, and they're wow. completely immaculate slot cars. So enough of the boring you guys with slot car talk, but we'll spice it up a little bit, because our good buddy Dylan at Law Chevrolet is going to give us the lowdown at Law Chevrolet this week.
Hey guys, it's Dylan out here at Law Chevrolet Buick in Boonville, Indiana. Hey guys, for the month of December, we're running employee pricing on our 2018 Chevrolet models, all of them. We're talking Cruises, Malibus, Equinoxes, your Traverses, your Silverados, and that's even on your Tahoes and Suburbans. Huge rebates, big discounts, especially around the holidays. Everybody wants to save as much money as possible for our drag racing family. Guys, we understand how important it is to get to the racetrack each weekend. I know how important it is for me as well as Steve and Chad and Josh here. We want to try and help you guys out as much as possible. If you guys come and purchase a vehicle from us, we're going to give you $600 on a Visa card. Hopefully that helps you guys get to the racetrack maybe twice, maybe get some gas money, maybe an entry fees. For some of us, that's definitely going to be buyback money. I may see you guys in the buyback line myself. But like I said, huge discounts for the month of December. So come down here and see us. We're located in Boonville, Indiana. Our phone number is 812-897-2220. So give us a call, and we'd be glad to help you guys out. Thank you.
So on the phone with us today is a guy with 21 career national event wins. 14 of those come behind a 10,000 horsepower machine, and seven of them have about a 1,000 horsepower plus machine. The 2013 Top Fuel World Champion, two-time Super Comp World Champion. He won a couple junior drag racing championships and is the current driver of the global electronic technology Toyota Funny Car for Kalitta Motorsports. But most importantly, he's the co-host of the Nomex Effect podcast with J.R. Todd, Mr. Sean Langdon. How are you, man?
I'm doing great.
Sean, thank you so much for joining us on Dialed In. We're excited to have you. Definitely bet our listeners are ready to hear what you have to say to us. And just kind of start out, if you would, just kind of give us a background of you know, coming up in racing and kind of where you came from.
Well, I just really started out, at a very young age going to the racetrack with my dad. He did a little bit of stock eliminator racing, but after I was born, he super gas racing and a couple national events here and there, but just kind of just grew up as a big fan of the sport, would enjoy going out to Pomona twice a year. I grew up about 15 minutes from the track, and that's kind of where I got my career started in 94, starting with junior dragsters. Progressed up into the super comp category and a couple of the other sportsman classes, eventually progressed up into top fuel in 2009. Kind of been a little bit of a journey, but definitely enjoyed every minute of it.
That's awesome. Yeah, I wanted to follow up a little bit about junior dragsters, because I think we started right about the same time. That was basically the beginning of junior dragsters. Was I think my first, it was either 93 or 94. was the first year that I started it. Did you ever think that it would get to the point that it is now?
Oh, I mean, absolutely not. You know, I mean, you hope and you dream and you have countless nights in the garage sitting in your car, kind of closing your eyes and maybe, you know, dreaming of it from the position of where I grew up. No, absolutely not. I, you know, I was just very fortunate to be able to race a junior dragster. I mean, our very first race car was a junior dragster car, was a giveaway car that I believe went, I mean, it was like a pole start, put unleaded gasoline in it, and went 40 miles an hour, and I thought I was setting the world on fire with it. I mean, looking back, you know, I always envied the guys and always watched the guys. I was a big fan of the sport. I went out as a kid, was always getting autographs from all the drivers and hanging them up on my wall every time I get back from Pomona and give my mom a little bit of hell with trying to replace drywall and all the pinholes I had in the wall of hanging up all my cards. But, you know, I loved it, man. I really enjoyed it. I was a big baseball guy, though. So baseball was kind of always a direction that I was wanting to go. And then I did the travel ball, Little League, the All-Stars, the whole thing. And as I went into high school, I was pitching for the high school team. And kind of as I started going, I think really in 1997, when I won the Junior Dragster National Championship in Denver that year, I didn't really have a whole lot of success before that. I'd won a couple races here and there, but never really kind of had that kind of thrill of winning in a race car. So I think that really kind of changed my perspective on what kind of road I was heading, where I just, after that, I loved racing before, but I really got into it for that.
Yeah, I saw that. You actually had two scholarship offers to play baseball after high school. Is that correct?
Well, yeah, I had a couple. And I just, you know, it was kind of one of those things that as I progressed through high school, I did a lot of pitching. I did a lot of pitching on travel, Little League, and played summer ball and travel ball and you name it. But I was always either pitcher or shortstop. And kind of the last couple of years in high school, I just my arm was really kind of starting to hurt a lot. You know, after I'd have rubber band arm years previous where I could throw all day long and all night long. And but kind of towards the end of the high school, it's just arm was hurting a lot. And I was doing a little bit better racing. I was winning some more races. And, you know, I really started to see the commitment levels, you know, with the racing. I needed to commit a little bit more time, but also with baseball, I needed to commit a little more time too, just to kind of take it to the next level. And I think just after high school, I just kind of made a decision. I had an opportunity. A guy by the name of Jack Brand came to my dad and had said, you know, asked what my plans were after junior race. And my dad had really said, you know, there's don't really have one. Don't really have the money to go buy a super comp car. Can't afford it. You know, that's really kind of where we're at. And so the guy had offered to buy me a race car and just started out kind of initially just wanted to race some local super comp events. So what I did is the very first event, I just all the money that I had saved up from working Christmas tree farms and little odd end jobs around Southern California, just basically depleted out my whole checking account and went to the Phoenix divisional event, got one grade point so I could go race the Phoenix national event. And that was just kind of really where it took off from there.
Yeah. And bring it to fast forward today. You're very well known as a bracket racer, as well as you are a professional top fuel racer, but you're also a guy that will stick his neck out there for the sportsman classes. And do you ever worry that's going to come back and they're going to say, hey, you know, tone it back a little bit? Because, you know, from our standpoint, you know, we think it's great when somebody's sticking up for us. And on the flip side, you know, that potentially could put your job in danger.
Well, I think, yeah, I mean, there have been times where maybe I've stuck in my neck out a little too far. But you know what? When you're passionate about something, you completely believe in something with your whole heart, you know, you're going to fight for it to the end. And I grew up a bracket racer. That's where I got my start. A lot of my friends came from bracket racing side. And, you know, that's what my family does. And so to me, you know, I believe in every aspect of bracket. I believe that, you know, that's you can make a career out of it. It's very hard to do. But with that being said, there's so much talent in the pool of bracket that it's, you know, at times I talk about it that, you know, I think you could hand select, I mean, 40 or 50, probably, maybe even bracket racer, and put them in the same position that I'm in right now. And they could, you know, do as well, if not better than what I've done. I really believe that the talent level there is, you know, it's not just they get in a race car. And yeah, there's a lot of things in a top fuel car. Top fuel cars are not easy to drive. I'll be the first to admit that. But I think it's all about speed, getting used to it. And I think that there's so many things you learn from coming from the junior dragster category and progressing up into the bracket racing that, you know, they kind of endure the same thing. I mean, some of the best drivers in our sport is definitely in the bracket racing. I think it goes really unnoticed in the public eye because a lot of people don't really know about it and just think that, well, it's an index race. It's, you know, it's not heads up. It's not, there's not a lot that goes on there. It's busy and it's really not. And I think the good thing I like about the bracket racing is it doesn't come down to money. It doesn't come down to, you know, sponsorships. I mean, a lot of people are able to race, you know, within their means. They build a car, whether it be a dragster, whether big block, small block, it doesn't matter. They're competitive, and it comes down to the driver. Comes down to the driver understanding the weather, how to dial your car, how to cut a good reaction time, and not just doing it for four rounds like what you do in a top fuel car. It's doing it for 8, 9, sometimes 10 rounds at these bracket races, and maintaining a level of confidence from 9 o'clock in the morning. Sometimes you go to these big races and you're running the final round at 2 or 3 in the morning. And to be able to do that is very, very tough. And I'll be the first to admit that I go out a lot of off weekends and do the bracket racing, but I believe that that keeps me sharp. I do the bracket racing, one, because I love it, but two, because I believe that it keeps me sharp for when I get in a top fuel car, and it keeps that edge to where, you know, I feel like I can take it to the next level on the reaction times and kind of bring that whole element into the top fuel class.
Yeah. And speaking of, it takes a driver, April of 2017, the news came out that you went to Kalitta after Schumacher kind of dangled you around for a little bit. How rough was that trying to hang around the Schumacher camp there for a while and try to get in a ride somewhere? And ultimately it didn't work out.
Well, it was tough. No matter how.
Cause I mean, it's quite obvious the talent level that replaced you was not an equal trade, but well, you know, as the almighty dollar shows, it doesn't matter.
Yeah. And you know, that's one thing that I've had to understand about the sport. I was brought in to initially drive the Lucas car. And then after that, I got after 3 years of that, I'd got a job offer from Alan Johnson, you know, arguably the greatest tuner of all time, called me to drive his car. And then after that, you know, obviously with the funding going out, you know, I made it, Don and I had worked a deal to where I went over there to drive for him. So I'd been very, very fortunate throughout my career that it wasn't about the dollar. It was about me just driving a race car. So I don't think I really grasped the concept of that you could potentially lose your ride in a sense for not bringing money to the table. And had we had the funding, I probably still would have been over there. But, you know, just corporate America is tight and things get tough. And during those times, these team owners have to make decisions. Sometimes you agree with them, sometimes you don't. But at the end of the day, it's business. And Don and I still have a great relationship to this day. I talk to him quite a bit. And, you know, same thing with Alan Johnson. And so I think it's just understanding the business side has been a whole new element for me of, you know, I just would do, you got a race car, you go race it. That's the end of it. And so understanding the whole different side of things now with social media and, you know, building your brand and so many things has kind of been a big eye opener to me these last couple years that, you know, I was always just kind of one of those guys growing up, just really quiet and kind of kept to myself for the most part. And, you know, wasn't really one to go and post pictures of myself and in a sense, maybe brag a little bit, or, you know, anything like that. So I just, when this whole social media thing really kicked off, it's just, I was always kind of one of the guys that got left in the back burner. You know, it wasn't about that to me. It was just about racing the race
car. You were busy working on your super comp car.
Well, majority of the time, that's what it is. I mean, it's, you know, I get home from a national event and I go to work on my sportsman cars. And, you know, now I've kind of accumulated 3 dragsters in a door car and teamed up with Todd Ewing a little bit. And you know, between us, we got a whole bunch of race cars. And so I go to work on my stuff during the week. And I'm, a lot of times I don't really think about the other end of things, you know, from the business side of it, but Yeah, I mean, it was a little bit of a tough pill to swallow, but, you know, I mean, everything happens for a reason, and I definitely learned from it, and I definitely took as much as I could out of that situation. Like I said, still have a great relationship with the whole Schumacher group and, you know, the crew chiefs and with Don, but it gave me an opportunity to come over to Coletta and, you know, kind of expand a little bit and I think expand my resume a little bit, being able to, you know, now drive in a funny car, getting the opportunity for that. You know, I think it's always good to kind of, you know, have something in your back pocket in case of, you know, in the future, if, something were to happen again, you know, I think now being able to be a little bit of an established funny car racer, but an established, top field dragster racer, if other opportunities come in the future, you know, I guess maybe have a little bit more on the resume to do with that.
Sean, I mean, I think that, you know, over the years, you've done a great job as far as marketing yourself, gaining sponsorship, you know, in your career. And I think that's something, a subject of interest to a lot of our listeners that maybe are just, you know, in the sportsman ranks, that are bracket racers, that maybe want to try to gain a sponsor or gain some type of marketing partnership, and maybe don't know the first thing on how to do it. If you can just, I mean, what would be like one piece of advice that you would give a racer in maybe how to gain a sponsorship or and what way to go about it?
Well, definitely don't take no for an answer. you know, you're going to get 100 no's before you get that one yes. So, mm-hmm. You know, I think the biggest thing is to, you know, obviously a lot of people work with marketing decks and, you know, put something together, put a resume together. A lot of opportunities are out there. It's just of finding it. One thing that I've kind of noticed throughout the years is the days of saying, hey, I've won 10 races or I've won 10 championships or here's my resume. I got 18 pages of all my accomplishments. Yeah, that's good. And that'll help you out a little. But I think in today's world, it's not about that. You're not just going to get that and say, hey, man, I need $10,000, $50,000, $100,000 to go race for the year. Check out all my accomplishments. You can put your name on the side of the car. I think the biggest thing today is working on B2B relationships with sponsors. So it's getting with sponsors, getting with these guys, but coming up with a plan, having a plan, going to the sponsor and saying, hey, here's my accomplishments, but also here's an opportunity for your business to make more money. I'm going to get you in touch with this guy and do some opportunities. And I think that in this day and age goes a lot further than, you know, just necessarily having a resume.
Yeah, that's definitely probably a good start. And I'm not sure, you know, you know a lot more than we do about it. So going along with the Bones stories, hitting the road with Bones, man, that's a guy that has been there, done that, seen it all. And, you know, that's kind of a great, not only good friend to be on the road with, but he's one heck of a mentor also.
Oh, yeah. We have stories for days with the.
What was it, your fault the toter ran out of fuel, or was it his?
Oh, it wasn't my fault. He's driving. Yeah, I mean, it's kind of weird. Just really, you know, we had met through bracket race, just became buddies. He came to me with an opportunity back when he was with Huntsville Engine. About me running their motors. And so with him and Andy, I got hooked up, you know, with running the Huntsville motors for years. And after that, you know, we just went to a lot of the same races. So we'd always kind of buddy up and race together, pit together, you know, but we would, you know, just really kind of became buddies. And a couple years ago, you know, we just kind of decided, you know, hey, why don't we just make this easier on us both, and we'll kind of just start running out of the same trailer and start splitting expenses. And, you know, it just is great as the bracket racing is and all the money that's up for grabs. It's hard to win, and you know, you have a couple bad months and it adds up. So we kind of said, hey, why don't we just we'll just run together, and you know, you got a few cars, I got a few cars, we'll kind of put them together and we can kind of pick and choose what cars we go race. And you know, just kind of became a pretty good relationship, you know, where I think it's you know, I can kind of pick up a little bit, but you know, as much as I'm gone doing all the top fuel race and all that, it's probably helped me out a lot more. Really, it's helped him. But you know, just it's nice just to kind of have, you know, someone that you're just buddied up with. And you know, if something comes up, you know, we'll just, I can, if I can't make a race, he'll maybe drive my car, or we'll get somebody else to drive the car, one of his buddies or something like that. But yeah, I mean, that's the cool thing about the bracket, is just all the relationships that you make throughout the years. And you know, I think noted, you know, by last year when that whole thing came down, when that Birdman guy talking on the internet of the bracket racer, the one thing that you'll find out real quick about the bracket racing, it's a big family. And at the end of the day, it's like putting your foot in a fire ant hill. You know, you step on the wrong side, you're gonna have a whole mess of them on your ass.
Yeah, and that goes to a little side note. The trailer's not kept in Brownsburg, Indiana either. You and Bones, I know you. I think you drove all night to get to Huntsville just a few weeks ago, didn't you?
Yeah, I've done that a few times. I mean, majority of the time, you know, I had a motorhome and trailer for a while, and I kept all the stuff up here. One luxury that I had when I was with the Allen Obby group at our shop was I kept my motorhome and trailer inside in the shop, and so it was really nice, really convenient. But kind of after that, it just Indiana are cold, and I didn't really have a place to keep it. You know, I was kind of finding places to rent and to put my motorhome for the winter time or whatever. But all the stuff's down in Huntsville, so it's all down at his place.
So what cars exactly are we talking about? What cars are yours that you have right now, Sean?
So I have a 2003 Don Ness Cavalier. I have a 2014 Undercover. And then Todd and I are partners on another 2014 Undercover and a 2009 Undercover. And then he just recently sold off his top sportsman car. But we got the old Vega, his Vega, and then he's also got a 69 Camaro Stalker.
Man, race car poor. That's rough. That's awesome,
man. It sounds good till you got to work on them, and then the bills start rolling in.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Did I see where you guys may or may not have ordered a new Undercover?
No. Lucas Oil Fab was actually looking at, you know, putting out some new chassis based off of design. But I mean, we've had some talks about some things, but you know, we haven't really progressed outside of that.
Well, one thing I wanted to ask is, I mean, Jake, for the first time, we have a fellow podcaster to talk to and ask about this crazy endeavor that we've decided to put ourselves in the middle of. So if you can, Sean, tell us about Nomex Effect. I mean, how did it first start? Whose idea was it?
Well, it actually came from our PR guy, and it wasn't really anything that we had ever contemplated doing. You know, and after doing a little bit, I give anybody that does podcasting credit, because everybody knows that when you start dealing with computers and electronics and plugging this into that, we've enjoyed it. It kind of started where a lot of times we go racing and, you know, we may go to the bar afterwards, have a beer, you know, just talk drag racing. Just when we're at the racetrack in between runs, we're talking drag racing. Our PR guy, Cody, he had said, you know, man, a lot of stuff that you guys talk about is pretty cool. You know, I think that, you know, obviously the TV show is pretty corporate. You know, you got to kind of be buttoned up for the TV show. You got to, when you get the interview, you got to thank your sponsor, and you got to, you know, talk about that stuff first and foremost, because sometimes it can be five or six races before you get another interview. So any opportunity you get, you got to thank your sponsors on that. But like he says, you know, there's so much behind the scenes in the sport that isn't open to the public eye. There's a lot of things that they don't know, that they don't understand, that the TV show may not be able to have time to explain, or they just don't explain it. So we kind of thought about it for a little bit, and you know, we just were like, well, I mean, you know, both of us are, you know, kind of quiet, I guess, for the most part. We don't really talk openly about a lot of things. You know, obviously we all know, you know, that it's pretty easy just to kind of stay to yourself and you don't get in trouble. But sometimes when you open your mouth up a little bit about your opinions, then you're kind of sometimes subject to other people's opinions, and they may like it or they may not. So we just kind of kicked the idea around, and I think he had actually put a post out on social media about like, hey, what do you guys think about this? And I didn't really know a whole lot about podcasts and never really listened to any podcast before that. But the feedback was actually great. A lot of people were really interested. A lot of people said some good things about it. So we just kind of said, hey, you know, heck, why don't we just try it out and see what we're going to do? And so we had kind of, all right, well, we got to come up with a name. And so we had a bunch of different ideas, and we kind of got to three. And I don't even know how the Nomex effect thing came out, but it was just in one of our conversations, it just got blurted out, and it was kind of like, that could be good. Well, we actually put a poll out on Twitter and on our pages, and so we had three different names, and another, I forgot what one of the names or the other two names were, but one of the other names actually had won. And so we were like, all right, well, I guess that's what we're going with. And so we kind of started like kicking around the idea, but just for some reason, just Nomex effect kind of stuck. And you know what? We're just like, you know what? Let's just go with the Nomex effect, you know? And I mean, for a lot of people that don't understand what Nomex effect is, Nomex is obviously the underwear that we are driving, you know, just fire retardant, basically underwear. And so a lot of times, you know, people's, you know, like drivers, oh, they get, you know, they get all the glory, they get all the credit, they get all the girls, they get all this, they get all that. Well, it's Nomex, basically, because drivers wear the Nomex. So we're just kind of like, you know, it's kind of fitting, I guess. And so we just went with it. And I mean, got some apparel out. So a lot of people, you know, seem to like that. So it's kind of been a neat little journey for us. You know, we've learned a lot. We've actually had some guests on our show, which, you know, helped out the show, you know, quite a bit. But I think it's pretty good being able to have a podcast that's kind of behind the scenes a little bit, where, you know, we could talk openly, we could talk freely about things that we like, about things that we don't like, and we can get other drivers' opinions. But the feedback from the fan base has been really good about it. I mean, we haven't had anybody yet tell us to shut up and don't talk no more. So it's been pretty good. I mean, everybody seems to like it, and so we've kind of just been rolling with it.
That's exactly where we're at. Nobody's told us to stop yet.
Yeah.
So you kind of hinted on it a little bit. Give us one of the biggest misconceptions that, not necessarily TV, but people have about being a fuel driver. You know, I know it's not all glamorous and glory, but give us something that nobody really realizes when they're like, oh, I want to drive top fuel. What was your biggest, holy cow, this isn't the fun part?
Well, I think politics. To me, I drive a race car because I love to drive. I wouldn't have it any other way. But I guess I was used to, when I was racing super comp and in the sportsman classes, never really had commitment, in a sense where I just would go to the racetrack, work on my race cars, and I would race for years after. Jack Brand, the guy that had bought the car for me, he had to sell everything, and then I had purchased the car off of him, and then I went racing on my own for years. It was, you know, well, I guess for the next 2 years, it was win a race to pay your bills. And so I would just work on my car, race the race car. Well, in a top fuel car, it's not necessarily about that. And that's one thing that I didn't get for a long time. It was just, well, you guys paid me to drive a race car, and that's what I'm doing. But it's not about that. It's about the sponsorships. It's about the relationships. It's about entertaining the sponsors that come to the race. It's about taking care of the fans, making sure that they have a good time when they're out there, signing autographs, being available. So, you know, for me, it was just being opened up and exposed to all this stuff where, you know, I'm just like, man, I just want to drive the race car. But, like, it's not about it. It's not about that. It's about all these other things that I was talking about. And then when you get in the race car, that's kind of a little, I guess, in a sense, break for the day. So
yep.
I think that was the hardest thing for me to kind of understand. Sometimes still is. Sometimes it's, man, it'd just be easier if I could just drive the car. But, you know, you get back from a run and you go over all the data and information with the crew chiefs, tell the crew chiefs what you felt on the run, look at the race pack. You know, I go out, I'm fuel, I pack the parachute, sign autographs, go over to hospitality, go talk to any sponsors. You know, our PR team will put together, you know, basically we'll have our schedule preset for the week for any autograph sessions, any sponsors that are at that race, you know, who's there, what their names are. So you make sure you go over there, talk to them and do all that stuff. So it's a full day, but it's not a full day of racing, you know, and I think that's the biggest difference that I had to get used to.
One thing I wanted to ask you, Sean, about the other drivers in the nitro categories. I know there's several of them that, you know, race sportsman type racing at some point or possibly even bracket raced, but which one of them, maybe one that we wouldn't think about, which one of those drivers do you think would possibly make the best bracket racer?
You know, I mean, not being biased, but I think J.R. Todd's, you know, done a little bit of sportsman racing, obviously junior drag racing. I know Tony Schumacher's done as well. I think Antron Brown would be really good. You know, I think, shoot, I'm trying to run down the list right now, but you know, I think you see a lot of more of like the sportsman drivers with more in like the pro stock class versus, you know, in the fuel cars. But, you know, I mean, there's definitely in the fuel class, there's definitely great drivers in the class and not taking anything away from anybody. You know, that's one thing that I've always said. I believe that you could take a good bracket racer and make him into a great top fuel driver. But I don't know if you could take a top fuel driver and make him into a great bracket racer.
I've listened to the podcast a couple times, and you know, you're always talking about these purses and bracket racing and the money in it. And you kind of hear J.R. Todd hinting, you know, about, you know, he's interested in it. I'm just kind of wondering how long it's going to be before he actually gets in one of these cars, because I'd like to see him come try. I think it would be eye opening for him, and I also think, like you said, I think he could do very well.
Yeah, well, I mean, I've offered the rides to him a few times.
Dude, but, I've got 21 cars. You crash one up, just pull another one out.
Well, this isn't rent a ride over here, bud. But yeah, I mean, you know, he'd do a good job. You know, obviously, you know, the purses that are out there in the bracket industry right now are just crazy. I mean, the biggest money that you know, life-changing money to people, and the biggest money that we've in years. And I think, you know, obviously I want to be a part of it. I mean, all it takes is one good day and you know, obviously a great payday. But I think, you know, maybe being able to, you know, utilize my podcast to, in a sense, be a voice of the voiceless for, you know, a lot of bracket racers or sportsman racers don't get the recognition they deserve. And so I think, you know, me being in the position that I'm in, I can, in a sense, be a little bit of the voice of the voiceless and talk about all the things that are going on in the bracket racing industry. And so, you know, there's times, I mean, you look at it, you can have a, you know, kind of make your budget type of bracket race where, you know, you could spend as much as you really wanted. But if you're not able to do that, you could go out low buck and you can still compete and race for these races that are paying out $250,000, $500,000. And but you look at like the top fuel stuff, and it's, you know, we're working on a $3 to $4 million budget racing for $50,000 to win, and it pays for a championship, you know, $500,000. Well, I mean, now you're talking about some people that are maybe on a $10,000 or $15,000 budget race for $500,000. So I think a little bit of it may, you know, maybe it, I think our podcast has opened NHRA's eyes a little bit about, you know, not just, you know, everything is good as it seems, to where it's like, hey, look, other people are making these opportunities available for racers to race for some big money, you know, and maybe it's time we start kind of, you know, bumping up this 1990 purse that they still have, and we start racing for some more money. And I think that it's a big attraction. I mean, you look at, you know, these $1 million races, they're getting 500 plus cars showing up. Well, you know, what are you going to start doing when you start advertising in a top fuel, you know? And it's easier said than done, but if you start racing in top fuel for $500,000 to $1 million to win, these are opportunities that, you know, maybe if people can talk about it, come up with some ideas, you know, all you got to do is just say the right things, and it clicks light bulb in somebody's head and says, that's a great idea, I'm going to work on it.
Yeah. And that kind of goes along the next question. So would you rather have Global on board to pay all of your bracket races for, I don't know, would you rather bracket race for free or have to drive a fuel car the rest of your life until you're the Greek's age?
Well, you know, the definitely the top fuel pays the bills. So, you know, I lived multiples where didn't have any income and tried to race for a living. Man, it was hard. It was really hard. I mean, there was a couple times where I'd show up to a racetrack and I'm sitting here thinking, if I don't do any good this weekend, I'm going to be struggling to pay my bills. So, you know, it's very hard to do. And just when you're racing out of your own pocket and you don't have any money. But, you know, I mean, as much as I haven't really said good things about NHRA or top fuel racing, it's a great job. I love doing it. I really enjoy racing top fuel cars. Do I want to do it till I'm 80 years old? Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I definitely want to utilize this opportunity while it's available, you know, for, you know, it's a great paycheck and I enjoy doing it. So, utilize this opportunity as much as I can. And then I'm sure at some point, you know, I'm probably going to look at it and, you know, I don't know when, hopefully not anytime soon, but, you know, probably go back to, you know, just racing, bracket racing full time. That's, you know, that's really what I enjoy. That's what I have to do.
So I know that you've traveled obviously to a ton of racetracks. I'm interested to know what's your favorite racetrack out there, Sean.
Ooh, that's a tough one. That's hard to say because there's just so many different tracks that just have so many different characteristics about it that I enjoy going to. I mean, any day you're going to a racetrack is a good day, let's be honest. But,
right.
I really enjoy, like earlier this year, I went to a race in Holiday Beach. Never been there before, never knew anything about it. But I showed up and it's a little 8th mile track that can only take so many rigs. But I really had a lot of fun. I just enjoyed it. I enjoyed just kind of the backwoods racing kind of feel. You know, a lot of the racing tracks we go to, little 8th mile tracks. And I love doing it. I would probably have to say on the fuel side for the national events, you know, Pomona has always kind of been a favorite kind of just because that's where I grew up. And that's where, you know, I just get so many memories and emotions when I show up to Pomona. But I think outside of that, my favorite track would probably be
Homer. So you probably haven't listened to many of our podcasts as we're episode 15 in so far. But last week we had Brian Lones on and we brought up the Pro Stock conversation. And, you know, he brought up that the shorter schedule would entice more teams. And what if we had a pilot program that, like you were saying, it takes, you know, one statement to the light bulb to come on somebody's head. What if there was a pilot program, say the, like how they do the wild card for the bracket finals. So like Super Pro brings an extra, whatever, say they had a wild card. This year, the Super Comp driver gets a Pro Stock ride for 4 races. NHRA pilots that whole program. I understand that's a lot of money startup, but how much more enticing could it be to have your shot, you know, show up and prove that you can do it in a sportsman level and you will have a shot guaranteed at the next level. I don't know. I think that's an awesome idea. However, I'm not sure to get it moving. What would it would take? A couple $1 million for sure, but.
Yeah. And I think that would be excellent. That's what I think. One thing that our sport is a feeder system. I mean, you look at NASCAR and they have the Xfinity series, you look at baseball and they have AAA, but they market the up and comer. And so, you know, the next generation that's coming through and, you know, the next generation that's going to be the next biggest star. I think that's one thing that our sport lacks. But something like that would be an excellent idea. Obviously it comes down to money. But I think maybe a team like Freeman with Elite, you know, they would probably be the best bet for something like that right now. To do something like that. But I think it's tough. You know, I think they're just trying to find their niche on how to make it all work. You know, obviously with NHRA cutting back their purses, I don't even know what it got cut down again. So maybe it's only $20,000 or $25,000, maybe $20,000 or less, I think, now to win a race. But you're talking about, you know, you lease a motor, you're up around $30,000 or $40,000. So it's tough. And, you know, then you got crew and you got travel and you got all those things. So with that being said, I think it's just, you know, what they did to cut it back to 18 races is what they had to do. That's the only way you're going to get these guys to, because the budget, you can win every race in the year and you're not going to beat your budget. So, and it's hard sell in pros right now for sponsorship. So I think it's kind of turned it into a little bit of a rich man's hobby for the time being. I think once, you know, corporate gets back in and gets back involved, I think that class can flourish again. I think it's an excellent class. You see some of the best racing in that class. And I think that's a driver's class for sure. I don't think that you can put just anybody in a Pro Stock car. So I think you see some talent. And obviously this year with Tanner Gray, with what he's done. And I was a fan watching that kid drive. How many times he'd go up there and, I mean, there'd be times I talked to him before a run and he'd say, I should be 008 to 10 on the tree. And he was within a couple thousandths of it. And I think stuff like that, to me, coming from the bracket racing side where you can call your shot, you can call your reaction time. I mean, that's, we all know from the bracket racing side, that's kind of what you get off on, you know, where it's like, I got a tight window on the tree. And, so I think, you know, seeing what Tanner leaving and Vincent Nobile not coming back, Drew Skillman coming, not coming back, you know, some of the young talent that's leaving that class. And I think that should be a tough pill to swallow, you know, because, you know, in order for the sport to survive, you need that next generation through. And, you know, with some of that talent leaving, I think that's going to hurt that class. But, you know, I think with cut it 18 races, it's just, that's what they had to do to keep those budgets down for those cars.
Well, we kind of wrap this up here. We like to ask just a couple of, you know, quick, lighter questions. And so far, my streak is alive. Either Jake or I guess have asked this question every time. What is your go-to race day meal? What do you have to fuel you to success on the racetrack food-wise?
Hell, whatever the chef's cooking. And hopefully it's not really good because I'm going to eat a lot of it. Then my crew chief's going to get mad because I weigh too much.
Yeah, put a little more clutch in the car.
Yeah, that's what I say. Just throw another nut on the primary, a little smaller tire, you'll be all right.
What will it take in your career for you to be content? I understand that you're happy where you're at, but what's one thing that's on your bucket list?
You know, I'm content right now, for the most part. A lot of goals that I set out to do, I've been fortunate enough to accomplish them. Obviously, now with this new endeavor with the funny car, it'd be nice to get a number one qualifier. It'd be nice to get a race win. And now it'd be nice to get a championship. One thing that's always eluded me and one of the hardest things to do, win the $1 million race. Every time I go there, I drive absolutely terrible.
I'll drive. That's the longest tree in the world.
It's tough, man. And I think for me, if I'm able to get a funny car championship and win the $1 million race.
So I had to ask this question. Whenever you are way out in front of somebody in one of these fuel cars, how hard is it to fight the urge to whomp the throttle on somebody?
Well, if you've seen explosions in a funny car, you know that I have zero urge to at any point whop the throttle. But it's, you know, you really don't notice. You can hear them. Mm-hmm. Now, sometimes you can hear them next to you, but you won't see a car until they're about 300ths ahead of you. So that's kind of where the bracket racer in me comes out. You know, we all know that in bracket racing, you kind of tell where you're at on the tree. Well, you kind of get used to sometimes in super comp where I can see the pre-stage and stage bulbs go out. You know, sometimes I'm getting left on, so I can see when they leave first or if I leave first. So as I've kind of progressed in the fuel classes, I can kind of know if I hit the tree or not. But if they're ahead of me, you know, we always have a guy at the finish line. So I always kind of get out and say, I think I got 200 or 300ths on the tree. I think I was 65 on the tree. He got there by probably 30 or 40 thou. So to me, coming from the bracket racing side, that's kind of, those are the things that I enjoy to do. But outside of that, yeah, you don't, you try not to pedal those things, man. It's one thing to pedal the dragster. I've had some pretty hairy in a dragster, in a funny car. It's just, you hope you don't have to pedal it.
Yeah, you need to go to the shop this week and put in a work order on the marker board, you know, make the side windows a little further back.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah. And I mean, with as much as I'm moving around and as much as some of the other people move around, I probably don't want anything that.
Yeah, I wouldn't think so. So word on the street, this is probably breaking news. Lones is going to be in the booth next year with Pedregon just because Pedregon is going to be doing the track prep. So what do you think about that?
Pedregon's doing track prep?
Yeah, he said, well, all you young guns, watch out.
No, that'll get interesting. No, I didn't know if it could get any worse than what it was.
That whole debacle with Pedregon, you know, he never wanted to pony up anything about it, did he?
He's a beauty. Yeah, no, I'm excited for Loans, though. Loans is deal.
Oh, dude,
awesome.
That's awesome. Yes.
You know, I think I really enjoyed Dave. Dave did an awesome job years. He actually, kind of fun fact, back in 1997, winning a dragster championship, he interviewed me top end. So I've known Dave Reeve for a long time, and Dave's a good buddy. But I'm excited for Brian for Loans. He's definitely got that voice. And one thing that JR and I, we talked about last year, and because we would always have the track PA playing in our pit, but Brian Loans can make, and this no disrespect to anybody, but Brian Loans can make Super Street sound bad. He just has that voice, and he can. And I think having that voice and the enthusiasm and the excitement, his knowledge of the sport, and as much as wanting to make things better and his ideas and all of these, there's a lot of stuff that we talked about on the podcast last week, but I'm excited for it. And I think this is just one piece of the puzzle of taking the sport to the next level.
I would agree with that 100%.
Yep. Jake, you got anything else?
Yeah. So what's up with you not flickering in a funny car?
Dude, it's hard. And it pisses. I had, you know, it's kind of funny story about this is, man, I'm trying to think of the year, maybe 2012. We were up in Seattle. Yeah, Seattle. Todd Ewing went out there to drive Bobby Dye's car. Bobby Dye with Specialty Fastener drove his car in a super comp. And he comes back from one of my runs, comes to the pit, and he goes, what's up with Doug Coletta flickering the bulb? I said, you know, I mean, he does it, you know, sometimes this and that. And he goes, you need to flicker the bulb. And so I'm like, all right, well, now it's a challenge. So really, that's kind of what started it. And so from then on, it was like, all right, I'm going to flicker it. So there would be times that I'd flicker the, and then it was enough that Alan Johnson, and he goes, why do you flicker the, and I said, well, I said, that's what I'm used to in bracket. I'm stayed shallow every single time, as shallow as I can. And then I just try to establish my window based off of how shallow, you know, staging consistently every time. And he goes, keep doing it. I like it. So from then it was like, okay. So then it kind of, I think it started kind of trending a little bit where, you know, that, and then it became like a challenge to me, is because it was always like, all right, if I want to be the guy, I'm going to roll it in a little bit. And it was a kind of a new thing I had to learn because I was used to sportsman racing where you always stayed shallow. But, you know, if I'm going to try, I don't want to lose this guy on a whole shot. I'm just going to slide it in a hundredth or two and try to get the tree. Well, then it became a new challenge. I'm going to flicker the tree and I'm going to tree you. And then we're going to outrun you, you know. So it became a whole new thing. A lot of other people kind of picked up on it. So then you started seeing more people doing it. The car I drove last year, we have Lam brakes that were on it. And with whatever master cylinders are pretty tough to find a good one. It's kind of like one in a five shot. You get five of them and one of them really good. With the global electronic technology dragster I drove last year, I could get this thing to flicker on and off, like a complete off. And so then it was just like, man, this is really cool. And then it started kind of being a thing where people were coming over and like, why are you doing that? You're messing me up. All right. Well, thank you for telling me, because I'm going to do it again.
Yeah. How about you go in second, not worry about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But then another thing, you know, that a lot of people don't know is it with the Top Fuel is it's on a random tree. So they put the 5/10 random from when the tree is activated. So we all know that when you're bracket racing, you're waiting to go on anything and you have a 5/10 variance, 5/10 in a race car,
it's a whole day.
Waiting for a tree seems like an eternity. So, you know, sometimes you get a quick tree. Oh, man, I missed it. Sometimes you get on a long tree, you start flinching. Well, I kind of started to learn how to manipulate the tree a little bit, that if you flicker the tree, it has a tendency more of being on a long tree. And you get these run sheets after it will show you what the length tree was along with all your incrementals. And it'll show it for every single car. So I started studying all of the run sheets to where I started seeing trends of certain drivers. Certain drivers weren't good on a short trip. Certain drivers weren't good on a long trip. So I can utilize the flickering in the dragster to where I can kind of manipulate the tree a little, just to try to create a little bit of an advantage and more of a disadvantage for the other person. But yeah, for whatever reason, a dang funny car. I think, I don't know if it's just with a little bit more tug on those from when you let the pedal out, what the RPM is, but man, I try to flicker it, but it's hard. I get mad majority of the time because it's like, I cannot flicker this thing. And every once in a while, I'll get it and I'll be like, all right, there we go.
So give me one guy you love to beat in funny car.
I mean, the easy answer, the obvious answer, John Ford. You know, the kind of the coolest thing for me was the first time I raced him this year in Sonoma. You know, obviously everybody's a fan of John Ford. So, I mean, I grew up idolizing the guy, and he's won everything there is to win. His numbers are the best numbers you'll probably ever see in the history of the sport. But it was just one of those things to me. Everybody knows that races that John Force likes to stage last on race day. And so I ended up having to run him. You know what? Maybe it was Epping. I can't remember. Anyways, I'm running John Force first round, and I went to him and just said, hey, I'm going to put a little extra on the tank. I just want to make John stage. And he's like, well, it's your car. You do what you want. So I ended up running him, and they told me to go in, and I just kind of sat there and was like, you know, it just kind of had a quick moment where like, dude, this is, man, I'm running John Force right now. Like, who the hell am I? You know, I grew up watching this guy for, would kill to have his autograph, you know, and just now I'm racing him. This is crazy. So I'm sitting there and I'm just waiting to pre-stage and I'm like, oh dang, this guy's not going in to pre-stage. I'm like, all right, cool. Well, I knew basically where I was at on fuel. So basically with our car, you know, you got to be careful because in nitro, every gallon is about 9 pounds and that's all on the nose. So if you burn off too much fuel, your worst case scenario option is you run out of fuel at 800 feet, which
and it goes
we all
lean
know what,
and that's bad.
That's real bad. Your second thing is the front end gets light and it's really hard to steer. So I wanted to maintain, I put an extra just over a gallon in. Our car at idle will burn, you know, about a gallon every 15 to 18 seconds. So I knew I probably had about 20 seconds to where I could waste to get it back to normal. And so I'm waiting to go into pre-stage, kind of keeping the run timer in my head. And I'm thinking, man, he's not going into pre-stage. And finally he goes into pre-stage. So then I go in and I follow him into pre-stage. And I'm like, all right, here we go. Let's see what he's going to do. And I just sat there and I'm just thinking, that's the coolest thing. I don't even care if I win this dang round.
Did you shove the lever over immediately?
No, I didn't. Yeah. I mean, I just sat there and just thinking, you know, I'm having a stage battle right now with John Ford. Like what's better than that, you know? And so after a few seconds, you know, 4, 5, 6 seconds, whatever, he ends up going into stage and I followed him in behind, ended up winning the round. And that was just kind of one of those things that was like, man, nuts.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm a regular listener at Omex Effect. So I knew that story, but that's one that goes twice that never gets old, tired of hearing that one for sure. Last and final question, Mira Luma, California, Mira Loma, Padres or Dodgers?
Well, they got the Angels. So
yeah, it's true.
I
the Padres are right next door, right?
Yeah, so I was actually probably a little closer to Angel Stadium. I was a little over an hour from Dodgers from Angel Stadium, and I think probably an hour and a half from Padres. You know, it was weird. I never really had a team growing up. When I was a kid, my favorite team was whatever team on my little league that I was playing for that year. So it kind of varied. A few years I was on the Blue Jays, so I was a big fan of the Blue Jays for a few years and always wanted to get the number of the best player, you know, at that time. But I'm just kind of a big sports buff. I don't really have any favorite in any sports. I do quite a bit of betting on sports, so it's just kind of really whoever I'm betting on.
And give us one Mike Dunn upset alert next year that's not Sean Langdon win the funny car championship.
Ooh.
Any pro category.
Any pro category.
Yep.
You know,
who was the bald guy in a fuel car that was showing up pretty good around the U.S. Nationals time? Mike Ashley, is that his name? No, maybe not.
He hasn't raced in a while. You know, what Blake Alexander did this year was awesome, but they're on schedule. You know, I think next year in pro stock, I would tend to say that Erica or Jaggy. I mean, they ran this year and they're excellent drivers. Funny car potential upset. I would say if you're looking at upset, maybe Wilkerson. Wilkerson ran well this year.
He's knocking on the door.
He ran, yeah, and he made some really good runs on certain tracks. I don't know if you would say an upset, but I think the guy that's always close, always top four, the last, heck, I don't know how many, Tommy Johnson, they made some really good runs at the end of the year. They qualified well. They would get to Sunday and just make one bad run, and that was the end of them. But, yeah, I would definitely say I don't know if you call Tommy an upset, but I would say that, you know, he could have a real good year.
So you're saying Austin Proc's not going to be an upset?
If Austin Proc gets in a car.
Ooh, I heard for sure through my sources that it's on. Courtney's stepping out to start a family.
Yeah, I think, you know, I mean, obviously things change. I think a lot of that's sponsor-based. I don't know. I'm talking out of rumors, you know, but I think that might start out to be a part-time car. I don't know if I've heard, you know, both sides of it, that'll be a funny car or it might be a dragster. I'm not really sure on that, but yeah, I mean, I think, you know, Austin did fairly well, you know, getting his license and, you know, he did, I think it, driving a funny car, anytime that you can keep it off the wall or the center line, you're doing a good job. So, I mean, that was my goal for the year. So I got lucky there and ended up exceeding my expectations.
Yeah. I think Jimmy Proc can probably tune a pinto wagon to run top sports. So.
Yeah. And I don't imagine that they would venture, you know, Jimmy Prock would obviously stay with Robert Height just because of the AAA sponsorship.
Right.
That's a pretty substantial, pretty big sponsorship. So I think that Jimmy Prock would stay there, but I definitely, Austin got in a funny car. You know, Jimmy would, you know, try to have his hands on it.
He'd be looking over shoulders.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, but I think it'd be cool. I mean, he'd definitely be up for rookie of the year. That's a
fact. Yeah. Well, man, it's been great having you, and we won't keep you much longer. We appreciate it, and we'll see you around. I might see you more than I did this year next year, so that'd be pretty exciting.
Yeah, absolutely, guys. Appreciate you having me on. I'm sure we'll see you guys at a racetrack soon.
So our In Motion Solutions final round discussion, we got to give a little prop to Wes Buck. I feel like the masses spoke and he listened. The 30 under 30 was kind of a popularity contest for quite a while. Not that there were people on there that didn't deserve it, because there most definitely were. However, it was more or less who was who and not a what is what. This year, he hit it pretty good. There's still a little bit in there, I think, but the guys that absolutely deserved it, you know, we had a lot of our podcast guests on here. Corey Galitti's on there, Tyler Bohannon, Edmund Ellison, Devin Eisenhower. Who else did we have? I think that was it that made the 30 under 30 so far. You know, Jake Howard got some PR with Luke and Jed, and, you know, that's awesome. And, you know, I think it was more or less recognize these people for their accomplishments, not what they grew up in. And I think that's exactly how it should go. And I think that's exactly who deserves it and the way it should be, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. It looks like some great talent on that list, and bracket racing, sportsman racing, you know, well represented for sure. And, you know, and Blake Alexander leading the list, and, you know, in the fuel cars, what he's done in, you know, teams that have lesser funding, you know, he's always been a good driver, and, you know, to get two wins this year and the 10 top fuel was huge for them. So yeah, I mean, looking down through here, looking through the list, you know, and Andy Schmall getting on the list as well. I don't know if you did mention that, but man, he is a heck of a racer, particularly bottom bulb. I know he can pretty much do either one, but you know, very, very good, accomplished racer. So yeah, I think that it's a good job. As far as, you know, I think that anytime you have a list like that, you're gonna have, you know, the certain people that want to be on it, and it is kind of a popularity contest in some ways. I don't know if you'll ever fully get away from that, because it's always everybody feels like, you know, they should have been on it, you know. Well, you know, except for me, because I'm 35, but you know what I mean. Everybody feels like, well, you know, now you should be on it, but the when it comes down to it, you got to pick 30 people. So, you know, that's
give
a tough
me,
job as well.
Give me one person you think deserves it that's not on it. I've got mine. Let's see if we're on the same page. We're probably not.
Man,
I'll let you think, and I'll go first.
Okay.
Brandon Barker.
Yeah.
Crushed. I mean, he ran amok on the Canadian Super Tour, first and third place with the same car. He wasn't hopping in and out of two different cars or anything, but the way their race director works up there, you don't have time to sit there and let it cool. It's dial it up and go after it. And sometimes they're not on the best racetracks. They're not on bad racetracks, but, you know, what Norwalk is here is hard to come by in Canada, because bracket racing is fewer and far between up there. But Brandon Barker just destroyed them in Canada.
Right.
And he was late in the million. I mean, he was down fifth or sixth round, I think. And he showed that he could do it here. He won I think he won something in Michigan. I don't remember either, but that's a guy I think very well deserves to be on that list by his driving accomplishment. It's not like he's got, you know, $1 million and go run top dragster. He just does what he can with his bracket program and does it very, very well.
Well, I'm throwing this out there, but I'm not sure if he's under 30. Mikey Sturgill?
He is under 30. I think he actually is 29.
So there you go. I mean, for me, I mean, gosh, the year he had, the streaks that he was on, and then winning the bracket finals and Division 3 and going to Pomona, I don't see how you could overlook that list of accomplishments this year in racing. He was on fire.
Yep, absolutely. And there's also an honorable mention of the final round discussion that the GoFundMe for Will Holloman was going around, and Brandon Taylor does not hold back. He most definitely was not in the wrong. However, that got a lot of attention, a lot of buzz, and got a lot of people fired up over that. And what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I thought it bared mentioning on the show. I mean, you know, since we had Will on and since we've talked about it before, you know, and just kind of the continuation of it is that the funds are still not there. You know, we still have a racer that won, you know, a $50,000 race that hasn't got his share of his winnings yet. And, you know, so, I mean, the GoFundMe page, I mean, you know, I think it's a good idea. I think, you know, I may have to put my 10 towards it or whatever it is and try to help the dude out, because that's, you know, he got a raw deal and it sucks. You know, I would hate to be in his position. You know, you work so hard to win a big race, you know, and it's your moment and you win the race and, you know, you get this recognition for it. But I mean, when it really comes down to it, where, you know, the money is what it's about. So, you know, it just sucks that happened. And it sucks on both ends. You know, I understand that these guys did not get into putting on this race and, you know, and thinking that they were going to stiff somebody. That was not their intention, you know, but for whatever reason, you know, it didn't work out. You know, the car count wasn't where they thought it would be. You know, I know the way they had weather challenges, but man, at the end of the day, you know, somebody needs to make it right. And, you know, I hope that happens, you know, from the people that put on the race. I hope that happens. I hope No Limit Promotions steps up and, you know, and does something. And they might be, you know, and we're saying all this and, you know, we're not talking to either of them. We don't, you know, we don't know exactly the details of what's been said and what may be in the works, but it's just sad. Sad that it came to that. And, so like I said, I think I'll put my 10 on the GoFundMe page, try to help Will out.
Yep, absolutely. And, you know, guys, as we've told you that for most of our winter episodes, our interviews are going to carry the episode because, mm-hmm. quite frankly, there's not much racing to talk about. We'll have the New Year's Nationals coming up. We'll be able to talk about that.
Yep.
There was a truck that did a 360 apparently in a no time race and still won. So go look that up.
It was impressive. Complete 360, didn't cross the center line, didn't hit the wall, and won the round. So I'm trying to remember the guy that did it. I can't right now, but look it up.
They still find a reason to throw me out, but that's all right.
Right.
So this has been episode 15 of Dialed In, guys, and we've outreached to a lot more podcast, I guess it would be platforms. And thanks to Jenna and Kristen for working on that. Give us like, share it, or like and share, as Fincham would say. it was a good time slot car racing with him over the weekend too. He's just the guy that is a true ambassador for the sport, and it's just awesome to be around him. But yeah, episode 15, we're gonna put a bow on it, and we'll see you guys not in the staging lanes. We'll probably see you on social media for the next few months.
Yep, we're on a practice tree race or something. So
hey, yeah,
everybody take care. Thanks again for listening. Get your stickers. You know, hit me or Jake up. We'll get your stickers out. Shout out to Joey Rippey. I'm sending a set to him tomorrow. So we appreciate all the help, and everybody have a good week. We'll see you next time.